Well, good afternoon, and welcome to Greek Club at Concordia Seminary, broadcasting from Resurrection Tower, because Christ is risen. He is risen indeed, and I want everyone listening to say that for 50 days, not just one day. I mean, we have an entire Easter season here, so let's have a little liturgical integrity. And I don't actually think I've ever said the phrase liturgical integrity before. That's a great phrase, isn't it? Yeah, so... Yep, so, all right, we are in Hebrews chapter 4, and we're going to have syntactical integrity today. I'll tell you, this is going to be great. We took a look at the beginning of verse 2, excuse me, which is not too hard. So let's just pick up right there. We're discussing the need to hold fast in order to enter finally and ultimately into God's, you know, I had to say this, eschatological rest. Verse 2, I'll just read it again in Greek, and then we'll take a look at the translation. So we have, Kai gar esmen euengelis menoi, kathaper kakenoi, al uk o felesen halagas te sakoes, ekenus, me sin kek keras menus te piste tois akousasen. So the first part is not too bad, for even, or for also, we, and now this next participle is from euangelizo, and it's actually a perfect participle passive. The duplication, if it could be called that, is actually the letter eta, the third letter in, because it's euangelizo. And the accent, actually, in the modern edition would also clue you in, I think, to the... Well, I guess, actually, that would be the proper accent place anyway. Nevertheless, it's with the linking verb, we'll take it periphrastically. We have been good newsed, or we have heard the gospel or had the gospel preached to us. Kathaper is a comparative particle, just as those guys. Kakenoi, as you can probably see, is just the combination of kai and ekenoi slammed together. And now comes the more challenging part, is what exactly to do with the second clause here. But, rather, here in 4:2, the word of hearing, there's the subject, uk o phelesen, did not help those guys, ekenois. Ekenus, excuse me, accusative object. And now we have sun ke keras menus is another perfect participle passive, and it means to comprise or unite with. And since it's passive here, being united. And at least the reading that's given in the critical edition here is accusative plural masculine, right? So the referent is ekenus. Now, let's do a little text critical investigation here. So do the two-finger thing where you have one finger on the text and your thumb or whatever finger you want to use on the bottom in the textual apparatus. And you can see that there's all kinds of mess going on here. See the first, it's the first replacement reading. Instead of sin ke keras menus, there's all kinds of options. And by the way, notice the little dagger or the cross there. That actually means that in the 25th edition, this was the reading, sin ke keras menos, a masculine singular nominative form was read, and then they changed it. So that, in a sense, that illustrates how difficult the decision it is. And by the way, I could recommend you again, I didn't bring it with me, but Henry Alford's commentary. If you want kind of careful text-critical grammatical analysis from the middle of the 19th century, which is still helpful today. I mean, Alford is your man. Now, if the participle were read menos, as the first variant is, then it's masculine singular nominative, and the referent has to be word, right? So then the reading would be something like this, for the word of hearing did not help those ones because the word was not united with faith in or for the hearing ones. tois akousasin. Okay. You can see there's another masculine plural nominative reading that follows. So this is actually quite a difficult decision, and you can see how the variant readings can actually change the grammar of the sentence. But we'll take it as it's given above. So the word of hearing, or maybe just the heard word, did not help those ones. Take this participle as predicate position causal, because it has not been united or joined together with faith for or in. Now we have another variant reading. We have tois akousasin in the text, but down below in the apparatus, there's interesting options. The first one is a genitive plural masculine participle, ton akousanton. Now, that would result in the reading, was not united in the faith of those who heard, right? And then the next reading is actually an aorist participle passive, if you can believe that, tois akousthesin. And then that would result in a translation, was not united in faith with the things that were heard. There it would probably be parsed as neuter plural dative, not masculine plural dative. And what they're trying to do is to make sense of, and if we just go back to the way the text reads in verse 2, but the word of hearing did not help those ones because they were not united in faith with those who heard. And there seems to be some gaps that need to be filled in. Like, didn't everybody hear? And so the easiest way out, I think, and probably this is the way the editors went, is to take the sense of tois akousasin is those who really heard, or something like that. And what you have is a distinction, then. The writer to the Hebrews is making a distinction between the generation in the wilderness, right? And everybody heard the message, but some heard with faith and others didn't hear with faith. Okay, and that's why they're, as we saw last time, their limbs were scattered in the wilderness. So you had arms and legs and shins and kinds of things like that. So, but it is an interesting case study in how the variant readings can really change the sense. And it's greatly discussed. I think I mentioned last week that Alford calls this a locus desperatus. So that was pretty funny. So, but I only think that's funny because I don't know Latin. Okay, so I think we have a tolerable sense of verse 2. Any questions about any of the variants or the parsing? Or again, we will take the participle sin ke keras menus as a predicate position and probably causal, something like that. We'll get an interesting genitive absolute coming up. So the writer to the Hebrews shows no mercy. Okay? And no, you don't have to sight read this. And by the way, although you guys are all good enough to do this, you know, you got to remember that the only reason that I can do this like with Greek, or that Seleska or Lessing can do that stuff with Hebrew, is because we do it for a living. That's why we're so boring, is because we just practice grammar all day long. Now, Kevin is here, and his goal in life is to be boring, right? So, yeah, that's good. So, okay, anything on verse 2? Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right. Good. Well, let's move on to verse 3 then. And the writer has written, Eis er kamatha gar eis tein katapausen hoi pestusantes kathos ereken hos omosa ente orgemu e eis eliusantai eis tein katapausen mu kaitoi ton ergon apa katabales kosmu genethenton. First part's pretty good. We have the, just from Eis er kamai, the present indicative middle deponent, and first person plural. And we keep going and get the subject with hoi pistusantes. So the believing ones, but it's first plural, so translate, we who believed, right? For we who believed enter, or maybe even, given the fact that the writer to the Hebrews shares the New Testament's sort of a linear temporal eschatological framework, you might actually translate this, are entering or even will enter. In a sense, you could give the present indicative there, ace or cometh, a futuristic cast. For we who believe are entering into the rest, kathos, just as Areken is from, of course, Lego. It's the perfect of Lego. Just as he has said, and now once again, because he's working very hard from the text of Psalm 95, as I swore from omnio, aorist, weak aorist, indicative, active, first singular, as I swore in my wrath, and now we have that, again, that primary Semitism where you have the Hebrew particle im, that's part of an elided construction. Isn't that the case, you Hebrew guys? The construction is normally elided. It doesn't, or does it say, may this happen to me if blah, blah, blah? Or do you just get the im construction? Sometimes, yeah, usually just the shortened version, right? So, if they will enter into my rest becomes, they will certainly not enter. It's a negation, so. So as I swore in my wrath, they will not enter into my rest. Kaitoi, you had to look up. It means indeed or surely. Indeed, and now we have a genitive absolute. Ton ergon is the referent of genethentone, which is the aorist participle, passive. It's middle deponent, but the passive doesn't have any real sense. From genomai, our friend genomai. So literally, the works being or happening from the foundation of the world. Okay? And because it's a genitive absolute, you treat it in translation like a predicate position participle, and you give it one of those options. And the option that's often suggested here is concessive. They will not enter into my rest. Indeed, although the works happened from the foundation of the world. Now, given the fact that he's about to cite Genesis 2, where God has already begun his rest, what commentators seem to suggest is that the writer is trying to say, look, now God in his own being is already resting from his labors. But we're not supposed to confuse that with the future rest into which the people of God have not yet entered. See? And so he feels the need to make that clarification, and that's apparently kind of what's going on here. Because he's about to explain with a gar construction that on the one hand, God has already entered into his rest, but the people of God haven't yet. Okay, and so that's why you get this concession of we who believed enter or will enter into the rest, even though indeed the works, and those would be God's works, happened from the foundation of the world, if that makes some sort of tolerable sense. Okay, questions about verse 3, translation or the sense of it? You have to really buckle up when you try to follow the argument of Hebrews. I mean, it's really interesting in that regard, and it's very, I mean, he knows where he's going. It's very elaborate, and it's very carefully constructed. So, okay? All right, verse 4, we'll continue and get the explanation for what he's just said. Verse 4, Areken gar pu perites hebdames hutos. Kai kat epausen hatheas ente hemera tein hebdame apa panton ton ergon autu. So we back up to the beginning, and we see our friend from Lego again, the perfect of Lego. For he has said poo somewhere. This, again, of course, is a rhetorical flourish, right? The writer to the Hebrews knows exactly where this is from, right? So you can't take comfort in this with one of your professors and say, well, I should know where this is from, But like the inspired writer of the Hebrews, I say somewhere. See, you could try it, but and it might work with Lessing because he's a nice guy, but Gibson Selesca would probably show no mercy. So, for somewhere he has said about the seventh. Notice that it's feminine singular here, and it's just an adjective. Hebdomos means seventh. But because it's feminine singular, it's just taken as day, right? The seventh day. You don't need the noun hemera, although we do get it in the next line. For he has said somewhere about the seventh day thus, and God rested on or at the day, the seventh one, from all the works of him. Obviously a subjective genitive, his working, right? And the citation there from Genesis 2:2, as you can see in the side note. So that's not so bad. Just when you were about to, you know, go back to the Gospel of John or something like that, you know, you can actually follow. There's a subject and a verb and the whole thing. So, quoting the Septuagint. Okay? So, the point that he's making is that God in himself is done, right? He's resting, but the people of God are not resting yet. And so today is a crucial day for the people of God to say, look, let us fear, let us press on, that we also might enter into that rest. That's kind of the argument, which is kind of a cool argument in a sense. So it's waiting, God's prepared it, but we hasten on again, like Israel in the wilderness, a pilgrim people moving toward the goal, right? So, okay. Four, anything? All right, verse 5. Kai en tuto palin, e es eliusantai, es teni katapaus en mu. Are you getting tired of Psalm 95, verse 11 being quoted? Sorry, we're not done yet, right? And in this place, again, the tuta, Alfred suggests that the tuta refers to Psalm 95. See, he's gone to Genesis 20. He's gone to Genesis 2, but now he wants to take us back to Psalm 95. So that's, and in this place that we're discussing, seems to be the suggestion of Alford. Again, if you hadn't heard it before, they will not enter into my rest. Okay, again, not too bad. Okay, and we can probably just keep moving, right? Verse 6. Epeun. Apa lepetai tenas es elthein es autain, kai hoi prateran eo angeles thentes uk es elthan de apetheon. Let's see. Let's go ahead and get let's finish the sentence because we need it to make sense. Palin tina or gidze hemeron semeron en dawid legon meta tas uton kranon kathos pros eretai semeron eon tes phonesa tu akuseta me skle runeta tas kardias humon. All right. Epe is a causal particle. It means since. And un is post-positive. So to translate, you put un in front. Therefore, since, apo lepo means to leave over or leave behind or to remain. And this is a present indicative passive. Could be middle, of course. Since, therefore, there is remaining. And what is the there, or what is remaining? This is a little bit of an unusual construction, but the lexicon actually gives some examples of this verb in some of the sort of contemporary and even earlier Greek writers. So we're going to take it as an impersonal expression. Something is remaining. And what is it? It's the infinitive and what goes with the infinitive. To enter is remaining. Sorry, Matt. It's okay. This is Hebrews, right? Yeah. Your first year, right? You're doing good. Adam, too. You guys are great. And the subject of the infinitive is tenas, certain ones, to enter, the accusative of the indefinite pronoun. certain ones to enter into it is remaining. All right? See, it's like anything else. It's like everything is always the last place you look for it, right? And at that point, it becomes easy. So for some to enter into it is remaining. And so since that's the case, and the formerly having been good news ones did not enter on account of unbelief or disobedience, I guess disobedience is probably better for apatheon. So since A and B, since some still get to enter and those who formerly were good news did not enter, talking about the generation that fell in the wilderness, on account of disobedience, now the other shoe drops. Again, horidze, he has to be God, he appoints tina hemeron, a certain day. Right? And the day, that certain day is semeron, today. And again, notice how doggedly the writer is clinging to the wording of Psalm 95. Right? In David saying, after so much time, the writer takes Psalm 95 to be Davidic, right, in some meaningful sense, and he's arguing in a linear fashion, because the events of the wilderness happened in the 15th century BC, right? David is king in the late 11th century BC. But David knows that the final rest hasn't happened yet. So after so much time, David can still quote Psalm 95, and so can the writer to the Hebrews. And he can pay careful attention to the word today. It's not unlike 2 Corinthians. Behold, now is the time of salvation, right? I mean, it's an urgent sort of existential appeal. Isaiah 49, which is?
Today
is the day of salvation, right. That's right. That's what I need, is people around me that know the Bible. That's exactly what I need. That's right. And who are currently working on Isaiah. Excellente, dude. Yeah. So saying in David, after so much time, just as it has been said before. You know, there's a kind of a unity here that's really stunning, right? And sometimes it's just hard to figure out what he's saying, but I think this point has now become clear. Semeron, today. If you hear, akuseta, aorist subjunctive after aeon, if you hear in the genitive the voice of him, if you hear his voice, me scleruneta, do not harden the hearts of you. Right. And this is why actually Christian preachers today can do the same thing. You know, you can take this ancient word to Israel or to the church, and you can just, of course, you follow all the responsible rules of exegesis and so forth. But you just say, look, God is speaking today too. Why? Because the rest remains. Right? I don't know what preaching will be like in the eschaton. Maybe there won't be any preaching in the eschaton, see, because you will no longer teach a man his neighbor or his brother saying, know the Lord, right? Which is from Isaiah, by the way. Yeah, come on. Right. So, Jeremiah. Yeah, I just wanted to see if you were paying attention. 31, verse 32, I think, or something like that. So, thank you. So, at any rate, and now I do want to get so that grammar, that was pretty good, right? Not so bad. Once you figure out what to do with the infinitive in verse 6, and then because I want to get to verse 8, okay? And because he has to explain, and this will confuse you, and I'll be happy to end on a confusing note. Agar autus Jesus kat epausen uk on peri ales elale metatauta hemeras. So two great things. One is we have the name Jesus in here, which translates as Joshua. Remember? He's working historically, right? Same name. And plus we have A, and you're minding your own business, and you're just reading along. You got A, and then you've got this aorist indicative. And then you see uk on. And at this point, the klaxon horn goes off, right? Ooga, ooga, ooga. What kind of a conditional sentence? Anybody? It's contrary to fact, so-called second-class conditional sentence. When you've got on, You've got a plus a past time indicative and on in the second clause in a past time indicative, contrary to fact. So you have to go back and give the English idiom is what you have to do. For if Joshua had rested them, or had given them rest, he would not have spoken about another after these days. So again, he's Moses and Joshua, that generation is 15th century. David is speaking in the 11th century. The writer to the Hebrews is speaking in the 1st century. And the voice continues because the final rest hasn't happened yet, right? And isn't it Hebrew? Somewhere it's in Pooh. Somewhere in Hebrews it says that they will not be perfected apart from us. Isn't that Hebrews?
It's the end of chapter 12, I think.
That's right. Yeah, the man. So, yeah. So, and that's how he's arguing. And so there's this, you're pretty, that's okay. That's close enough for government work. So we end with a contrary to fact conditional sentence, and which kind of ties together, in a sense, the invitation of God, you know, to the people of God, you know, guide me, O thou great Jehovah, pilgrim through this barren land, right? I am weak, but thou art mighty.
LSB changed it to Redeemer.
I know. I learned Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah. So, right. I'll sing it the way God intended it to be sung. That is in the hymnal that I was raised with. Okay. All right. Any questions about verse 8? We kind of went fast there, but I kind of wanted to get the thought to that point. So. Okay. Very good. Well, Greek Club, thank you for coming. And Christ is risen. Hallelujah. For at least 48 more days, right? And then he'll be ascended.
Well, thanks for dialoguing with the club.
Absolutely.
This is not just a monologue.
Yes.